Mini-episode 872 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at Sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late-night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode number 872. We've got FDH Lounge dignitary Rick Morris with you here today, along with a gentleman who has joined us for a lot of good college football talk in recent seasons, longtime friend of the program. He covers college football for such fine outlets as Our Sports Central. Fran Stuckberry coming back on the program to discuss all things college football for the 2017 season, which is upon us. Fran, I always look forward to these chats. Great to have you on today and to get your insights about the season we got coming up.
Thanks, Rick. I'm happy to be on.
Thank you very much for being here. As we look ahead to this week, it's very interesting because a lot of times you can't really talk college football without talking about a good part of the media, and it seems always ESPN. They're always omnipresent in these things here, from having the SEC network to a lot of their other coverage and the ways that they sort of weigh upon the storylines of the college football season. You would have to think on a week like this coming up that if you're going to be talking about broadcast coverage, they would prefer to be talking about such things as this very interesting surround concept that they're going to have for the Ohio State-Indiana game on Thursday night, which is, it's a curious choice to me to pick that game, to be perfectly honest with you, but to have coverage of the game on different networks and sort of do some of what they have replicated with the national championship game, I guess it's a sign that they're going to do this for different games here and there. They'd probably rather be talking about something like that rather than all of the foolishness surrounding taking a broadcaster named Robert Lee, a young Asian gentleman, by the way, not a Southerner, certainly not a slaveholder or Confederate general, but a young Asian American sportscaster, taking him off of a game at Virginia for purposes that just seem kind of silly. So as is so often the case, ESPN, John Skipper et al. Would probably rather be talking about one ESPN storyline with football, and instead they've got another one that's in their hands.
Well, Rick, it's a big surprise the last couple of years that they've lost 10 million subscribers, the cable companies are cutting down, all these budget cuts and all these things. Rick, I'm surprised they didn't take you to the game. Rick Morris is a non-offensive name. I'm surprised they didn't send you to the Virginia-William Mary game.
Well, it's offensive to some people I've known, but yeah, not nationally anyway. So I don't quite understand that one. And again, the backlash that they're getting. And John Skipper is saying, well, certain people, and I know that he has Clay Travis in mind when he says this, are using this for grandstanding purposes. Well, duh, Clay Travis is going to grandstand about anything ESPN related, but why would you give him, and why would you give all the critics out there the ammunition for this? It plays right into the hands of that, and as you said, they've been getting a lot softer the last couple of years with the cord cutters out there and their own financial situation not being as good. They really can't afford any kind of self-inflicted headaches, especially for something as important to them as their college football package, which is one of the foundations of ESPN right about now. So, yeah, it's not a great way for them to start the season, and certainly not a great look for them.
No, it's not. I mean, it's just, and the thing is, Rick, I'll be honest with you, one of the people I'm going to miss the season on ESPN is Dan Canell, who was one of those people that got laid off. I always enjoyed his insight. I mean, I watch some of the shows. I mean, they do a good job. It's just not, I don't know what it is. I don't think it's up to where it used to be.
I would kind of agree with you on that. There's some fine talents that are no longer a part of what they're doing there, not least of which a gentleman that had been hosting the Saturday afternoon studio stuff. Give a shout out to frequent FDH Lounge guest Robert Flores, whose presence I think is certainly missed on the Four Letter Network and ABC Sports et al. But as we look ahead to the season here again, as I say, kind of a curious choice to take that Ohio State-Indiana game on Thursday night and make that a focus of the surround coverage, if you will, because they have one of the biggest college football regular season games of the decade, especially if we start going non-conference. This is, I think, almost inarguably the greatest college football non-conference game of the decade. Saturday night of Labor Day weekend, what a way to get the season started. In the ATL, neutral site game, Alabama-Florida State. Oh, by the way, same stadium where the national championship game is going to be played. I've got Alabama and Florida State 1-2 in my FDH preseason ratings here, so that means I think we're going to get a rematch come January. What a way to start the season. Again, if this game isn't a much better candidate for surround coverage, I don't know what is. I understand you've got a lot of other games going on Saturday night, and they might feel like they have to devote resources to everything else, but that's going to be one of those things. It's almost like the eclipse of the sun. You know, I think almost nothing else matters in that moment except for Alabama and Florida State while that game's being contested.
Well, it's going to be a huge game, and basically, Rick, I think whoever wins that game will, even if they lose the game the rest of the season, will pretty much be a lock to make it into the Final Four.
You would have to think so. Now, there's been some speculation about the loser of the game. And, again, if there's a blowout, if this is like 37-10, then I guess all bets are off. But I don't think anybody's expecting that. They seem to be two very evenly matched teams in a lot of ways here, albeit a lot of people are giving the nod to Alabama just because of their record in big games over the last decade. But, again, assuming that there's not a blowout either way, the thought that a loss on this thing is going to mean that either team can't afford to lose a game the rest of the year, I have a hard time seeing a circumstance where Florida State is the ACC champion with two losses, one of them being to Alabama, and they get squeezed out of the four-team playoff. I cannot see any scenario whatsoever in which Alabama has lost two games, including one to Florida State, and is the SEC champion and gets squeezed out of the playoff. The SEC does not reign as far supreme over the game as it did for many years when it monopolized the national championship. But there's no way I see in my mind any year on the horizon, much less this one, where the SEC champion, unless it's like a four-loss team out of the East that pulls off the upset of the year and beats Alabama in the championship game. Alabama being an SEC champion is not a team that I can see being excluded from the college football playoff under any circumstances, especially this year. Do you agree with me?
Well, one thing we have to keep an eye on, Rick, is that, I mean, this Florida State game might be the only quality opponent that Alabama played. You better hope that LSU and Auburn, you know, opponents on the schedule are actually, with all the hype they have this year, are good, because they need quality wins. I mean, in the ACC, Clemson's going to have Clemson, they're going to have NC State, there's going to be Miami, there's going to be a lot of quality opportunity wins for Florida State more than Alabama. Right now.
You're right about that. And, of course, the SEC West is going to be critical to the calculus as we look at this, A, because Alabama, of course, is going to play everybody in the West, and B, because it is, of course, as it has usually been, by far the tougher of the two divisions in terms of competition. LSU, Auburn, they're sort of the perennial challengers up there to Alabama, to whatever extent maybe you start to look at Texas A&M, if they have maybe a little bit better of a year than people think, perhaps that could be a quality win. But as you look at the landscape of the SEC West there, is there any scenario that you can see where LSU and Auburn, which are both in very interesting places, LSU in their first full year under Ed Orgeron as their full-time head coach, and Auburn coming back after a couple of tough years head-to-head versus Alabama, is there a scenario in your head where you can see where either of those teams plays Alabama tough or perhaps even escapes with a win?
Well, I mean, LSU, we'll see what happens. If the offense can, if they can actually throw the football, the past couple years, Rick, LSU has not thrown the football at all. I mean, hopefully they can do that. Also, now, finally has a quarterback with the Baylor transfer quarterback. They finally have a quarterback. And a lot of people think, I mean, basically, this is your opportunity. You have Alabama at home. This is your chance to make a name for yourself and get one of those spots.
I agree with that. You look at the SEC East, and I have to say, a year ago, and I try to keep my own fandom from playing a part in this, but I was believing that the Tennessee Vols, of whom I am a fan, and you tried to talk me down off the ledge a year ago, but I thought they were going to escape the SEC East with a championship and even pull the upset in the SEC championship game. Butch Jones has got to be on a little bit thinner ice in Tennessee, because last year was supposed to be the breakthrough year. Yet, the landscape in the division still leaves it kind of wide open here. It's a fascinating point in time. It could be a make-or-break year for Butch Jones. If it's a very disappointing year in Tennessee, it could be his last. You've got Kirby Smart in Georgia looking to rebound in year two after expectations weren't met in year one. Florida is looking at kind of a revolving door at quarterback, as they so often have been the last couple of years. So the East, while it doesn't necessarily seem to have a credible challenger for Alabama, is going to be very intriguing in its own right.
Well, I think Georgia is a team to beat in the East simply because they have the running. They have the running game with Nick Chubb. They have Jacob Eason. His sophomore year, he'll continue to improve. I mean, a fun game to watch in a couple weeks, Rick, will be them against Notre Dame. We'll have to see how that plays out. But Tennessee, the problem with Tennessee is they don't beat good teams. I mean, they're terrible against top 25 teams. They have to win these games. They have to beat Florida. They have to beat some. They have to win games. They have to win these tough matchups. So otherwise, Butch Jones could be on the way out eventually.
I would certainly agree with that. It's basically put up or shut up time. And you mentioned Notre Dame there. So in between talking about the Power 5 conferences, let's go on them briefly, not least of which because Butch Jones always seems to follow Brian Kelly in his different jobs. I think that streak is going to get put to an end if this is Brian Kelly's last year at Notre Dame. Unless Tennessee has a much better year than anybody thinks, I don't think Butch Jones is going to be able to walk into the South Bend offices and say, I'm a specialist at following Brian Kelly, let me do it again. But just the fact that we're even talking about this potentially being Brian Kelly's last year shows you the disappointment that Notre Dame is coming off of a year ago. DeShone Kizer is gone now, gone to my Cleveland Browns, actually. And may I say, Hugh Jackson appears to have done a better job of fixing his footwork and accuracy than I could have ever hoped at this point in time. But that's not Notre Dame's issue anymore. They've got a lot that they've got to get solidified. At long last, it's put up or shut up time for Brian Kelly, a coach that came in with a lot of promise, a coach that had done such an amazing job at Cincinnati, Central Michigan, other places like that, a guy with the requisite Irish background seemingly to succeed in South Bend. Again, in terms of the FDH rankings that we have, and you can find that, of course, in Pro Football Draftology 2017, available on the main page at FantasyDraftHelp.com and TheFDHLounge.com. I've got Notre Dame in my third tier of teams, ranked 22nd in the country this year, coming into the season. What are your thoughts on this? I got to think a season like that might not be enough to keep Brian Kelly's job.
I mean, I think he's going to have to lose 9 games to save his job. It's just the height of the expectations. The fact that he... recruiting good players, but they're not executing records. That's the problem. And they always lose the teams that they're supposed to beat. So we'll see what happens this year. Will they lose to Georgia? Will NC State beat them? Will North Carolina beat them? We shall see.
Absolutely. They've got those ACC matchups in there as part of their quasi-ACC affiliation that they have in college football, and it is, of course, in other sports, a full-fledged membership in the conference. Let's turn our attention to the ACC. You mentioned a couple of teams right there, and you and I have talked about this off-air to a decent extent. You now having planted your flag personally in the triangle, it's not necessarily something that the average college football fan thinks about in terms of a college football hotbed, because traditionally North Carolina State, Duke, one of those programs at any given point in time might be sniffing the top 25, but in terms of the teams that come through there in the ACC, the ability to see college football really any week and to really see some very, very interesting games throughout the course of the season, not least of which the rivalries with with each other, you are in a very fascinating place for being able to watch the game in terms of going to games.
Well, last year I went to a North Carolina game, an NC State game, and a Duke game. I had fun all three games, but the best experience I had was at the Duke game because it's a small stadium and you're closer to the action. But as far as these three teams are concerned, North Carolina, I think they're in for a long year because no more Mitch Trubisky as a quarterback. They may struggle a bit. The NC State team will have as a sleeper, but people think that they're a possible sleeper team. They can maybe beat Louisville or upset Clemson or even get Florida State or run for their money. But I have, I mean, 20, a year ago, they were inches away from coach Dave Dorn getting fired, but then they upset North Carolina Steve's job. Now they're a team that they think they can make some noise in the ACC. And as far as certain, I mean, they'll be better this year. I didn't have a chance to go to a bowl game. The thing is, David Cutcliffe, coach of Duke, he's done a phenomenal job. But the thing is, if he just gets into a bowl game, that's all, they'll be happy. The alumni will be happy and the fans will be happy. I'm glad he didn't move for another job, because if he did, the stress would have been killing him. He wants a better coaching job. And Duke, all he has to do is just be competitive, get the bowl games on a regular base, and the fan base will be happy.
It's a reasonable expectation, to be sure, because you look at the Coastal Division, and you've got Virginia Tech and Miami commonly favored in most quarters, I think, to contend for the Coastal Division championship. But it's on the other side that we have the powerhouses that have really been making a name nationally over the last several years. And in the case of Florida State, much further back than that. Florida State, commonly held by a lot of people as the favorite because of some of the graduations that happened to Clemson coming off of their national championship season. Louisville is right up there. Anytime that you've got the Heisman Trophy winner coming back, that can't be discounted. So those three teams right there seem to be dominating the lion's share of coverage in the ACC, and one would think for very, very good reason.
Yeah, I mean, those teams, you know, it's all the hype and all the expectations of teams. Miami is a team people are looking at in the other division because they think that, you know, Mark Richt is recruiting, he's doing a good job. You know, keep an eye out for Miami as well, Rick.
Yeah, I think they can definitely make some noise. If they ended up in the ACC championship game, that would not surprise me at all. Sweeping through the country here, moving north and going from the Atlantic Ocean all the way out to the heartlands now with the expansion that they've had in recent years, the Big Ten Conference, and it has certainly worked for them on a business level in terms of the expansion of the Big Ten network into New York and Washington, D.C., so and other prime areas on the East Coast. So it's worked in that way. Rutgers and Maryland have not really made as much of a footprint in the Big Ten to this point. Certainly the reorganization in recent years on a geographical basis did them no favors, because perennially one of the toughest divisions out there in college football, the Big Ten East. Ohio State, Penn State, I'm going to be at that game in October. Maybe the conference game of the year, you could make a very good argument for that. I think the winner of that game is probably headed for the college football playoff. You've got Michigan, who is the third team in that mix there. And again, coming off of a year with a huge missed opportunity, and certainly everybody in Ann Arbor is going to be crying about that spot call on fourth down at Ohio State last year. They're going to be crying about that till the end of time. And it was a great opportunity for them to go in and beat Ohio State. They're much less positioned to beat Ohio State this year up in Ann Arbor. The chance of Jim Harbaugh going 0-3 against Ohio State with a team that was somewhat beset by graduations last year, this is not a good of a window for them to take on the beasts of the Big Ten East, Ohio State and Penn State.
Well, the problem with Rick this year is that Michigan has lost so many players this past season to the NFL. And the thing is, Kansas, Michigan, if they don't beat Ohio State this year or do well, I mean, there's a lot of pressure on Jim Harbaugh to win in Michigan. Now, fans may not be as lenient with him as they have with a lot of the coaches.
Yeah, and again, I was right up there with everybody in hyping this, and it's way too soon to back away from the whole thing. I said this was going to be the modern Woody and Bo era in terms of Harbaugh and Urban Meyer being so well matched against one another, and it's way too soon to back away from that. But yeah, the pressure is going to be starting to get turned up on Jim Harbaugh, certainly in another year or so if things aren't going better than that. Michigan State has been kind of a disappointing program here of very recent times. Mark D'Antonio just has not had players in there that are nearly as good. It was interesting because a year or so ago at this time, you would have looked at it and said Ohio State, Michigan, Michigan State, Penn State, all there kind of together in the Big Ten East. Michigan State right now looks like decidedly the fourth of those teams, albeit certainly most people still think a cut above Maryland, Indiana, and Rutgers. But Michigan State is an intriguing program, and you can't count out Mark D'Antonio, because when that program has been going strong, they've been very strong. But it's just interesting to see them down at the moment, which is unanticipated when you look at the history of D'Antonio at Michigan State.
Well, with all the success they've had in Michigan State, I think that, you know, they would do for a down year. And the thing is, this year, I think they will bounce back a little bit. I'm like, maybe seven or eight victories and get to at least to a bowl game at least.
That seems like a reasonable expectation. I could certainly see them doing it. The West Division, somewhat, again, kind of like the SEC East, a lot of times an afterthought when you're looking at the conference, but it's always very important to take into consideration who's going to be coming out of there. You've got Iowa, which 2 years ago was having that very, very strong season out of nowhere. Wisconsin, a perennial power out there. Nebraska. Northwestern in recent years has kind of made some noise. So there's been a lot of kind of parity at the top of that division there. But the chance of a team coming out of there being strong enough to give, in all likelihood, Ohio State or Penn State a tough time in the Big Ten championship game still seems like kind of a stretch.
Well, I think Wisconsin will get out of that division simply because they have a very weak schedule. They don't play Penn State. They don't play Ohio State. They have Michigan at home. They play Nebraska, which would be a fun game to watch. But I think Wisconsin's a team that I think, you know, they're a smash mouth, run ball football. I think they'll get out of that conference, the division, I mean.
I think that's a very excellent choice. I think there's they year in and year out have been very tough against the competition in that division. And they just seem like in a vacuum, the team you just kind of look at and think that they're going to be likely to come out. Swinging over a little bit more geographically to the Big 12 Conference, which is going the very, very interesting route here this year of having a championship game whilst not being divided into conferences. So you're just looking at the top two teams meeting at the end of the season, and very commonly out there, there are a lot of folks who are thinking, and count me as one of them, there is an excellent chance of getting a Bedlam rematch in the Big 12 championship game. I've got Oklahoma 8 in my rankings and Oklahoma State 10, the highest that I have any teams from the Big 12 rank this year. So talk about that. You've got a Kansas State team that certainly looks to be very tough again. The first year of Tom Herman at Texas, and we've seen how he can sneak up on teams in the first year. And Texas in recent years being a team that a lot of people thought was talented but underachieving. So that whole kind of whirlwind at the top of the Big 12 is going to be fascinating. And in terms of seeing what rematch of what regular season game we are going to get.
I'm looking forward to Oklahoma, Ohio State in a couple of weeks. That should be fun to watch.
Yes.
I think Oklahoma is a team to beat, but the wild card is the new coach. No more Bob Stoops, so we'll have to see if the new coach can do a good job. That's going to be interesting. Oklahoma State, they're making some noise. I mean, Gundy with his mullet. I mean, everyone loves that. And being outspoken. And we'll have to see what happens. Baylor, Matt Rhule, I mean, the team was that, you know, all the problems they had with violations. He's gonna turn things around for them eventually. TCU, I think, will bounce back this year and play a little bit better.
Yeah, TCU is, they've been a perennial threat in the conference since coming into it. They look a little bit more middle of the pack right now than they have been, but again, like you said, they could certainly make some noise. And one of the biggest wild cards in the entire conference in recent years, it's been hard to peg them season to season, and sometimes almost week to week as far as what to expect, but West Virginia, the team that is the geographical oddity in this conference, located far to the east of most of the other teams out there, also kind of an oddity in terms of consistent play from this program. When they're good, they're very good. When they're disappointing, they're very disappointing.
Well, we'll see what happens week one when they play Virginia Tech. I mean, that'll be a fun game to watch.
Absolutely, yeah. The renewal of a great rivalry there that they have geographically, and that will be something that a lot of fans will be looking forward to with great interest. As we turn our attention to the Pac-12 conference, there's one program that seems to figure in a couple of the biggest storylines this year, based in large part on how they finished last year, that being USC. They've got maybe the most intriguing battle of quarterbacks coming up when they play UCLA in their season-ending rivalry game. You've got Sam Darnold v. Josh Rosen. That is going to be fascinating. And a lot of people are looking ahead to a potential Big 12 championship game of USC and last year's champion Washington, which is a team that, of all the teams I thought last year that were sort of the sleeper hipster picks ahead of the season. Tennessee and Michigan, who I had picked to make the playoff, did not live up to my expectations. Washington, I had pegged as a potential breakthrough team. A lot of people thought maybe they were a year early, but they managed to make it through and, again, didn't prove to be able to stand up to Alabama by the time they made it there. With another year under their belt in terms of the development of that program and the younger players, maybe if they got another crack at Alabama this year, it would at least be more of a contest. But USC, who has traditionally, over the course of the Pac-12, back before it was at Pac-10 and Pac-8, they have been used to being the focus of that conference, and in a lot of ways it seems like they are again this year.
Yeah, they finally are, all the hype and all the expectations. I think Sam Darnold's going to win the Heisman this year. I think that's my pick to win the Heisman. We can go over that later. But I think this is the year for USC to make a statement, get to the 14th playoff, and we'll see what happens.
I, too, have them in the playoff. I, too, have Sam Darnold as the Heisman Trophy winner this year. And it's a thing where it seems like it's a very much chalk kind of pick, and we've seen in recent years that the chalk pick for the Heisman a lot of times really doesn't get it done. But to me, he's the real deal as far as a quarterback. He is potentially the most highly developed and highest upside quarterback, and a lot of people think, to come out since Andrew Luck, also out of the Pac-12 in 2012. And this is a guy where, again, I know certainly New York Jets fans, like my good friend and fellow FDH Lounge dignitary Russ Cohen, they're going to be watching him with great interest this year. But something that my fellow FDH Lounge dignitary Chris Galloway pointed out to me as far as the storyline goes there, this is something worth keeping an eye on. He is, after all, at this point, I believe, a redshirt sophomore, and he is not necessarily in any hurry to get out of USC. He's loving it there. He's having a great time. Remember Matt Leinart? He had a chance to come out earlier. He didn't want to necessarily. You talk about a man becoming the most hated person in the history of a fan base. If the Jets have the season everybody thinks they're going to have, they get the number one pick, and Sam Darnold takes a look across the country at them and says, thanks, but no thanks. I'm coming back for another year. That could be a very fascinating scenario.
Well, Rick, as a Suffolk Jets fan, I went through that with Peyton Manning. He decided to stay in Tennessee another year, and imagine if he came out, Jets would have taken him, and who knows what would have happened.
Yeah, I mean, the odds are he would have had the career that he had anyways, because he is that capable of lifting an entire organization on his shoulders. But Sam Darnold is that very same kind of quarterback. There's a couple guys that you look at that are in that mold this year. Certainly, we talked about it with Josh Rosen as well. You have Lamar Jackson coming off of his Heisman Trophy campaign. But as you had pointed out to me off air, as we turn our attention over to Wyoming and some of the schools outside the Power Five conferences, there's certainly some talent there as well.
Yeah, I mean, Josh Allen, he's 6'5". He's a prototypical quarterback. The NFL scouts are salivating over him. But in the Mountain West Conference, I still think that Boise State is a team to beat, and they could potentially make some noise to get that non-Power 5 bid. In the American Athletic Conference, I think South Florida will probably be the best team. I mean, Charlie Strong is finally coaching a team where he's not going to have stress that he had in Texas.
That's a very good point, and as I look at the FDH rankings for this year, I'm in concurrence with you. I have South Florida ranked as the highest of the non-Power 5 conference teams. I've got them at number 18 in the country here, and dropping down to look at some of the other ones, I've got Boise State 28, Wyoming 33. I'm looking to see who else in there. That's just about it for the non-Power 5 conferences as far as where I have them listed. So I would kind of tend to agree with you about that. Now, Charlie Strong had a little bit of some off-field issues already with his players this year, so that's going to be worth keeping an eye on. But as you said, expectations are going to be very high for this team, for the amount of talent that's there, for the amount of coaching that he's going to be able to do with them. Again, he brought a very great reputation from Louisville into Texas. Those years, of course, in Austin did not live up to expectations, but this is potentially an excellent chance for Charlie Strong to really sort of rehabilitate his coaching image. And as much as South Florida fans are not going to want to hear this, medium term, potentially get himself back into another job in a Power 5 conference.
Yeah, I think when it's all said and done, they'll be South Florida will be one of New Year's six teams. So looking at the other football conference. I think Appalachian State will win the Sun Belt. Conference USA, I mean, we'll lead the attack. But the thing is, in Conference USA, everyone is talking about Florida Atlantic with Lane Kiffin as first year as head coach. I think they're going to win at least 6 or 7 games and get their first bowl bid since the 2008 season, Rick.
I think you're right about that. And again, it's already been a very volatile tenure for him there, but he is attracting top caliber players relative to the type of platform that he's on there. So essentially players that are better than other schools in the conference. So I kind of tend to agree with you about that. The Mid-American Conference looks to be very interesting again. I will be homering, as always, for my alma mater, the Ohio Bobcats, our arch rival, the Miami Red Hawks, Redskins, whatever they are these days. They appear to be kind of coming up, and there might be a little bit of juice in that rivalry for the first time in forever, because we've pretty much just been wiping the mat with them habitually. But Toledo, a perennial power, they are the favorite in a lot of quarters in the conference. So it's going to be fascinating also in the MAC.
Yeah, I think Toledo's going to win this year. If P.J. Fleck was still in Western Michigan, I think Western Michigan would have been the team to beat. But I think Toledo's a team to win in the MAC. And like I said, Rick, in November, when on Thursday night, on Tuesday and Wednesday, I'll be watching MACtion on ESPN.
Absolutely, when all of the coverage moves to there. And it's very, very interesting to see, because I'm always fascinated whenever schools pursue anything that looks like a parallel track with their football and their basketball programs. For a couple of years there, John Boeheim at Michigan paired up with fellow West Virginia refugee Rich Rodriguez. Just kind of a coincidence, but you talk about P.J. Fleck. Let's go back to the Big Ten just momentarily here. Doubling down on very, very promising youth. I don't know that I've seen anything like this with any other conference team, a major conference team in recent years, when you look at the football and the basketball teams here. P.J. Fleck in football, Richard Pitino in basketball. It's going to be a challenge hanging on to both of those guys. But the chance to have both of those programs really elevated at the same time at a school by super promising young coaches is not something you see every day.
Yeah, I think it's definitely going to be interesting. Minnesota, they could be an 8 or 9 win team. I'd be surprised if they ever get to a Big Ten championship. But strange things happen. But it should be fun to watch. But we're talking about the new coaches coming out and making an impact. Jeff Brom, he's coach of Purdue. I actually interviewed him when he played for the XFL Orlando right back in 2001. Willie Taggart at Oregon, they were a 4-win team last season. I think they're going to be the most improved team in the country this year. And actually, for the first time, Oregon has a defense. We shall see, Rick.
Yes, it's going to be a fascinating year, certainly for the Oregon Ducks, because they're not used to coming off of the kind of disappointment they dealt with last year. As far as individual players go, we touched on it briefly, the Heisman Trophy race. You and I are both out there with an awful lot of people saying Sam Darnold is going to be the guy to beat. We've already talked about Josh Allen, Josh Rosen, Lamar Jackson, somehow or another, guys in the second year, outside of, again, I would say the greatest college football player of all time, Archie Griffin, being the Ohio State homer I am, because he's the only guy to win the Heisman twice. Guys don't kind of tend to get it done the second time around, albeit you can't write off Lamar Jackson's chances, even with the heightened expectations for him. You've got Saquon Barkley at Penn State. When you start getting into running backs, back to quarterback Baker Mayfield at Oklahoma, you certainly can't count him out. He's a guy that's been in the mix the last couple of years. So while Darnold looks like the guy to beat coming into the season, and that has a lot of times been a position that is very kind of fraught on that, because it almost seems to be living up to expectations. It's almost like the whole dynamic in presidential debates about setting the expectations ahead of time, and then did you clear expectations? Sam Darnold, you and I think, can still win this thing, but he has to clear a very high bar of expectations. Some of these other guys, not so much.
No, for example, if Alabama goes undefeated, Jalen Hurts, the quarterback, is going to be on the steroids for us.
Yeah. Alabama, as always, has a couple of guys in the mix that could be in there. I'm not sure Bo Scarborough is going to necessarily get the ball enough to be a contender, but if he ever did, all you got to do is look back at Mark Ingram to see that it can be done there, no question about it. As far as it goes in the Big Ten, when we're looking at players like that, I think it would be a massive, massive leap to put him in any kind of Heisman consideration, albeit when he was at his peak in 2014, he was certainly somebody that was considered for that. Somebody that I think is the biggest wild card player in the country this year is JT Barrett, because as he has kind of declined in 2015, 2016, not having Tom Herman there, so too has Ohio State's chances at a legitimate shot at the national championship declined. I didn't have great hopes for them going into the playoff last year because of Barrett, and he played down to my level of expectations at that point, and then some. Thought that bringing Kevin Wilson in here, you hear that in spring practice and the offseason things have gone well, you're going to see more of the 2014 JT Barrett, but is there any player in the country that is more of a wild card in terms of what he can do to his team? Because prime JT Barrett has Ohio State back as a national championship contender legitimately. If it's subprime JT Barrett, this could be like a 9-3 season.
Well, I think they can get to the get to the playoff. I think they can win the Big Ten. I mean, obviously the game in Michigan will be fun to watch, but Penn State, you know, that's going to be a huge game that you'll be at.
It is indeed. And it's funny, my dad and I kind of got lucky on that one. The misfortune of Fox Sports is our good fortune, because we're not as big on going to 8 o'clock games down there. And obviously in recent years, you've seen the way that it's gone in terms of big games have to be prime time, et cetera, et cetera. This is not going to be the case because Fox Sports has the game as opposed to ESPN or ABC. And that game will be happening during the World Series. So it's going to be the lead-in to a primetime World Series game that night. Fox is beside themselves. My dad and I are smirking and grinning at that one. But there are very few, if any, games that are more primetime worthy, shall we say, during the season than that one, Fran.
Yeah, that's going to be college game. They'll be there. You'll have Lee Corso with his headgear picks, which are great. It's going to be a ton of hype. That's the one thing about college football. Like right now, we're looking at some big games, but during the season, there might be some games that come out of nowhere that people are going to be wanting to watch.
Absolutely. What are some of the games you think are a little bit under the radar that we should be paying attention to?
Well, the Oklahoma-Ohio State game will be fun to watch. Hopefully LSU is up to the hype, so the LSU-Alabama game will be fun to watch. Week one has some intriguing matchups. Down here, everyone's going crazy about the NC-South Carolina game in Charlotte with the Carolina Panthers play. That's a game people are talking about a lot down here.
Oh, absolutely, and I'm looking at this here, once again, from Pro Football Draftology 2017, available on the main page at FantasyDraftHelp.com and the FDHLounge.com. I've got a list of the top college football games of the season as we see them coming into the season, and some traditional rivalries here in the number 14 and number 15 spots. So these are games that we're not sitting here talking right now saying, I can't wait for that game. But both of them played on a neutral field, as is tradition. Number 14 on our list, Florida versus Georgia, world's largest outdoor cocktail party. Number 15, the Red River Shootout, Oklahoma v. Texas. In the case of that one here, Tom Herman's first crack at the Red River Shootout. So those are some games right there. The only legitimate national championship contender out of those four teams I just mentioned seems to be Oklahoma. Obviously, it's a must-win game for them to stay in the national championship race, especially if they are not so fortunate against Ohio State early on. But even games like that we're not talking about right now, traditional rivalry games, I think they could really have some juice as far as shaking out the landscape at the end of the season.
Yeah, I think that's definitely the case, because, we'll see what happens with the games, and there's always a surprise team that comes out of nowhere that causes noise, and it should be interesting with the rivalries, and especially in November when the playoff committee is doing the weekly rankings.
Absolutely. Once we start getting into that and the rankings for the college football playoff, it will be fascinating to see. And so, again, you and I have already given our Heisman Trophy predictions here. Once again, quoting from Pro Football Draftology 2017, I am going to give you my rundown for all of the New Year's Six this year. I've got, sadly enough, I must have Penn State going over Ohio State right now, although I think it's a coin flip. I'm still somewhat of a JT Barrett skeptic, but I've got Ohio State over Clemson in the Orange Bowl, getting a little bit of revenge for the two losses to Clemson in recent years. Cotton Bowl, Oklahoma over Georgia. Peach Bowl, LSU over South Florida. Fiesta Bowl, Washington over Oklahoma State. We get into the semifinal games here. In the Rose Bowl, I have in the 2-3 matchup, USC over Florida State. In the Sugar Bowl, I have Alabama over Penn State. And in the national championship game, a very rare matchup of major powers. Two teams that seem to exist on parallel tracks a lot of years. I think they even split a national championship back in the 70s. But I have Alabama playing USC in the national championship game in Atlanta, which is their backyard. And I have Alabama winning their second national championship in 3 years. So at a minimum, as far as the four playoff teams and for anything else you want to predict, how do you see it going, Fran?
Well, Rick, one thing to keep in mind is the last three times that Alabama has been the preseason number one, they haven't won a national championship, so we'll see if that trend continues. But I have Alabama as one of my teams. I think I have Ohio State, Florida State, and USC. So, I'm leaning towards Florida State to maybe to possibly win it, but, when we do our bowl preview show towards the end of the season, I'll have a better idea of who I feel is going to win it. But it's going to be very intriguing to see what he does strength schedule, or if a situation where if a team doesn't get to their conference championship, are they going to put them in there? Because the committee has always emphasized winning the conference championship gives you credence to get a playoff spot.
Absolutely. It's a little bit harder to see that being the case this year, where a team is going to miss as opposed to last year. There was a lot of controversy last year when Ohio State made it over Penn State. My sense going into that, and of course Ohio State's play in the national semifinal game really, I think, kind of undermined my point. But I thought the committee had done the right thing in putting Ohio State in there over Penn State. I thought, in terms of looking at the body of work for the season, I thought that Ohio State's was preferable to Penn State's. This year, I think it's going to be more clear-cut. I think the winner of that game, assuming they take care of business the rest of the way during the season, even if Ohio State loses to Oklahoma, if they beat Penn State, if they win the Big Ten, they're going to the national championship game no matter what. But is there any scenario in any conference where you could see a team being in the national championship game without benefit of winning their conference?
It's really hard to tell, because I think it's a long shot at best. Because in the Big 12, you're going to have to win because it's going to be the top two teams playing each other.
That's right. That's right. The one true champion, as they like to say, it's actually going to happen on the field. You're actually going to have the two teams playing off. And as I said before, the very unusual scenario of a championship game sans divisions. So you're just looking at pairing up two teams at the top of the conference here. Tiebreakers are going to come into it. That's going to be kind of messy as far as figuring out the two teams potentially, because it's easy to see a scenario where maybe it's a round robin of three top teams that all beat one another, all 1-1 against the other teams in there, and you have to go to further tiebreakers to determine who the two teams are. So without benefit of divisions, it could still be kind of messy. But that is a great point about Alabama, as we're coming full circle on this thing here, because they are a consensus number one this year. What I always do when I'm devising the FDH rankings going into a season is I always take a look at the top polls, I average them out together, and I like to see where I come down on them versus where the consensus is. I did not come across a major poll anywhere this year that did not have Alabama number one. That is highly unusual. Usually there's some kind of split in there where there would be another team up there. But Alabama swept the board in all the major polls I looked at.
Alabama is every single poll. But one thing I want to talk about, Rick, for all you military people listening to Army, Navy, Air Force, the Commander-in-Chief Trophy. Last year, Army beat Navy for the first time in 14 years. And this year, I think Army is going to win the Commander-in-Chief Trophy for the first time since 1996. And I think all three teams, Army, Air Force, and Navy, will be in bowl games, which is always good.
Absolutely, and that is definitely something to keep an eye on. And as you said, Army's resurgence has been shown by, again, finally getting that breakthrough, that very emotional win in the Army-Navy game last year, something that really meant something and I think drew more attention to that game than it has had in a long time here. And while that game should always be a focal point just because of the importance of the young men who are playing that game, realistically, you get a stretch of dominance like Navy had, and it's hard to take it as seriously as a big rivalry, notwithstanding everything else that's on the line. But yeah, Army has really kind of revitalized that. That's an excellent point on your part. Any other thoughts on your in your head, Fran, about the 2017 season?
Well, what I've learned, Rick, is in college football, we have to expect the unexpected. There's going to be some surprises. There's going to be overhyped teams. Some people think Florida is an overhyped team because they don't have a quarterback. Some people think Michigan's going to struggle this year because they've lost so many players. And that's what I learned about college football. There's always going to be teams. Right now, there's teams in the top 10 that are not going to be in the top 25 when the season ends. That's what I love about college football. Expect the unexpected. There'll be teams coming out of nowhere, and there'll be matches that we're looking at like, it doesn't look that good, but then they're going to be huge. And game day will probably go into places that they don't expect to be at.
That's a very good point, and I think, again, in terms of looking at this, why I have been a proponent, I was a proponent for at least a decade before it happened, of just going to the plus one system like they have now. You play the semifinals, the finals, you leave it at that. I was never in favor of a playoff beyond that because there's no other sport where the regular season means as much as it does in college football. Many of these games that we see are going to be eliminator games along the way. It has a little bit less impact now that there's four teams that can play for a title instead of two teams, but this to me is the perfect balance, Fran, of where these games still mean something. One loss in a key game can still take you out of the mix. You don't see that in any regular season in any other sport, including also in football in the NFL, where that's the case, because teams routinely make the playoffs with as many as six or seven losses during the course of a season. In college football, every week matters.
Yeah, and Rick, I don't want them ever expanding it to eight playoffs. I know there's probably a reminder to make. I don't want that happening, but then it waters down the regular season even more. I'm happy with four. There's so much hype. The games need something every week. The rankings come out. If they expand to eight, then you might have a three-loss team if they expand to eight.
That's right. That's right. And, again, ours is a very unpopular point of view on that one there. I just always hold my breath that I'm not going to be shipped to a leper colony someday for standing against an expanded college football playoff. A lot of people think it's un-American, but I certainly concur with you on that. You don't want to sacrifice the meaning of the regular season, and this to me is the perfect balance. Four teams in there, that's all you need. To me, it works perfectly, and it's not worth whatever benefit that all the proponents would see at the end of an A-team or even, God forbid, a 16-team playoff. Hopefully, it stays the way that it is forever. It'll certainly be that case for the 2017 season, and as you and I covered, so many intriguing nooks and crannies to this season. Always a pleasure to break it down with you, Fran, and while I'm in no hurry to see all of this play out because I'm looking forward to a tremendous autumn of football, I am already looking forward, once we have that in the rearview mirror, to breaking it down with you and previewing the college football playoff when it comes around again. Already looking forward to that. Thank you so much for your time, as always, Fran.
Thanks, Rick. I'm happy to be on. Like I say, I'm living in the South for Raleigh, North Carolina, over here. I don't have a snack yet.
Well, enjoy all the football from your perch, including the games, of course, that you will take in person. Always a pleasure to break it down with you, Fran Stuckberry. Thank you for your time, and thank you, everybody, for joining us today for FDH Lounge mini-episode number 872.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, All Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IAmBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.